Welcome to today's deep dive. If you accidentally slice your hand with a kitchen knife, the protocol is, pretty obvious. You wash it, apply pressure.
Right, maybe get stitches if it's bad.
Exactly. You certainly don't just wrap a dirty bandage around a wound that's still full of debris, right?
No, that would just trap the infection inside.
But I mean, when we step into the realm of social friction and emotional wounds, we kind of act like wrapping a dirty blade in gauze is a medical breakthrough. We offer these half-hearted, excuse-laden apologies.
Yeah, we really do.
So today, for day six of week eight, we're auditing why your brain does this. The mission is to prepare you for today's workbook questions by breaking down the psychology and the neuroscience behind them.
And we have to emphasize, you need absolute, total honesty today, since you are the only person who will ever see these answers. Sugarcoating anything is just actively sabotaging the neural rewiring you've spent all week building.
Right. Any hedging is just a profound form of self-sabotage. So let's jump into the questions. The first hurdle here is really the sheer force of ego.
Oh, absolutely.
Question one asks, where you avoided a clean apology because admitting the truth damages your preferred self-image. And then question two asks what specific action or tone or delay you were tempted to explain away instead of just owning.
Yeah, that is pure cognitive dissonance at play in the brain.
How so?
Well, when your actions misalign with your core belief that, you are a quote unquote good person, the brain perceives an existential threat. So to shield you from the pain of guilt, it immediately starts generating excuses.
Oh, to lower that internal distress.
Exactly. It
Yeah.
shifts the blame to the environment or the other person. You have to actively drag that subconscious process into the conscious mind.
Okay, well, since we're talking about dragging things into the light, I'm gonna put you on the spot here.
Oh boy.
For question two, what is a specific excuse you were tempted to use this week?
Fair enough. Well, just yesterday, I actually snapped at a junior researcher in the lab, and my immediate subconscious excuse was like, if they had just formatted the data correctly, I wouldn't have to be frustrated.
Wow, so blaming them for your reaction.
Pure ego protection. I didn't want to feel like a bad mentor, so I had to stop, take a breath, and just say, I apologize for my harsh tone. It was
No
unprofessional.
conditions attached?
None. But it's so hard to do in the moment.
It really is. I mean, I caught myself doing something similar this week, justifying a harsh email because I was supposedly just too stressed.
Right.
But cognitive dissonance isn't the only trap, right? Because question three asks where you need to stop apologizing just to keep the peace when you weren't actually wrong.
Yeah, sometimes we swing the complete opposite way. The brain uses apologies as a cheap social lubricant.
A social lubricant, I like that.
It's just calculating that taking the blame is momentarily less painful than actually navigating the conflict.
Which completely dilutes the power of a real apology. When you apologize just out of discomfort, you aren't resolving anything, you're just absorbing the other person's anxiety.
Right, you're training people to disrespect your boundaries.
Exactly. You trade your long-term boundaries for like 5 minutes of artificial comfort. Which brings us to the repair phase, questions four and five.
Because a real apology is a starting line, not a finish line.
Right. Question four asks what making things right actually requires from you beyond the apology itself.
And question five asks, what would change in your closest relationships if your apologies became faster, cleaner, and were actually followed by correction? So let me turn the tables on you now. How would you answer question five? What changes for you when you do that?
Oh, that's easy. It completely disarms defensiveness. I mean, when you just say, I messed up and I own it, the other person isn't bracing for the other shoe to drop.
They aren't waiting for the excuse.
Exactly. It builds profound relational trust because they learn your word actually has structural integrity.
And that trust extends to your relationship with yourself, too, which actually surfaces in unexpected ways, like with question six.
Subconscious processing question.
Yeah. Question six asks, what dreams or unexpected thoughts surfaced from your bedtime question? Because your brain is parsing all that unresolved social friction during sleep.
I've always wondered about that mechanism from a neuro perspective. How does a bedtime prompt turn into a gold nugget of insight by morning?
Well, during REM sleep, your brain replays emotional memories from the day. But crucially, it does this without the stress hormone or adrenaline present.
Oh, wow. So there's no stress response.
Right. So you can process the guilt of a bad apology without those defensive ego spikes we talked about earlier. Your conscious mind gets out of the way.
That is fascinating. And it's exactly why maintaining the daily practice is so vital. So, before you wrap up today, please remember to anchor these insights. Review your stack three times today.
That's your three code rewrites, three distill points, and two quotes, right?
Yes, exactly. Three times today.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, do not skip tonight's bedtime question.
And rest easy, because tomorrow is day 7. It's a light and easy day that will perfectly transition us right into the next law and module.
To leave you with one final thought, we talked about how a fake, excuse-laden apology acts as a defense mechanism to protect your ego.
Yeah.
What incredible psychological freedom might you unlock the moment you realize your ego doesn't actually need protecting?